Chinook, it's a warm wind.
It's a changing wind.
Chinook, a program for and about Alaskan natives.
Chinook Echoes is looking back into Native heritage.
How things are and how they got that way.
Chinook Patterns is information.
Issues that affect the patterns of Alaskan life.
Chinook Profiles, portraits of people, places, events.
But mostly the people who are Alaskan.
Welcome again to Chinook. I'm Paula Schiller. For the last several weeks, we've heard testimony from last summer's hearing on the American Indian Religious Freedom Act. We've heard people from all over Alaska talk about Native religion and what it means to them in the most personal terms. This testimony was distilled down to a few essential phrases and put into a report to the president. The president, in turn, ordered the various federal agencies to make sure none of their regulations interfere with the practice of Native religion. In these last two excerpts, we'll hear from an Indian from California, and now from a man who is both Eskimo and Catholic.
Having been sent away from Bethel before I reached the age of 9, and having lost total contact with my own culture, my grandfather, from 1939 until 1961, I did not return. In the meantime, I joined an organization called the Society of Jesus. It's a Roman Catholic priest organization. And I entered that organization in 1946, and because it's a 15-year program after high school, I didn't return until 61 when I completed the course. The chief reason I want to make this statement is that I think I've seen the other side of the fence. And in the context of the old saying that I'm sure the people back in Washington, D.C. will understand, you can always take the boy out of the country, but you can't take the country out of the boy. And I try to tell people that, number one, I'm an Eskimo first, because I think, though I can't recall, unfortunately, a lot of the stories, the cultural values, the religious beliefs that my grandfather transmitted to our people, I'm reminded by this group what those are. And as a person who has been exposed to the Western religions, I feel that our federal government must recognize the fact that, despite the fact that different culturally expressed religious beliefs may be different from those brought in by the dominant culture, those religious beliefs must be recognized as being genuine religious beliefs. And if this commission or whatever takes this hearing and says that these Eskimos, these Indians, these Aleuts, and everybody else are trying to use this idea of freedom of religion and saying they're trying to do it just to be able to hunt freely, as a lot of people think we want to, and control in a non-commercial way our livelihood, which has him inseparably connected with it, these beliefs. And I find that whether you're talking with people, the outside Indians or Alaska Natives, the beliefs are rooted on the land and on the water. And these have gone back generation after generation after generation. If this hearing is to determine whether or not our religious beliefs connected with our animals, our fish, our land, our waters have not been taken into consideration before, I think as somebody who's been exposed to the studies of the religions of the world, including Roman Catholicism, which is one of them up here, and sadly I have to say that everybody that made statements about the manipulation used by different religious groups is true, because I've been one of those whose life has been manipulated. I hope that the federal government, the commissioner, whatever, that hears this, will say, yes, we may not be able to identify that they named some religious group up here, that an Eskimo like me comes up and says, I heard this from my grandfather in a sod hut back in the 30s, or in a tent in a fish camp, or maybe a tent out on the tundra when we were hunting. But these are real, and they've been passed on. And even though Raymond said, we don't have a written history, that's true. But that does not make those beliefs any less strong, because you don't have a document that says it goes back 45,000 or 50,000 or maybe 14,000 years. That's not the important thing. We're talking about things that are very deep and very strong in us. And despite the fact that I am a fish camp Eskimo who's been away from the fish camp for a long time, they're strong in me. They're very, very strong. I feel very close. Very close in my identity, in my cultural identity with my grandfather, and through him, because he was a spokesman. He's a source of wisdom, our religious leader. I feel that coming back. I've never really lost it. I've just put it in a different context. These beliefs, these religious beliefs, are real, and the ways that they were expressed, I hear these people talking about, you know, not offending the spirit of the salmon or the seal or the walrus. These are real. These are really religious beliefs, because religion really means the contact that we have with higher powers. We may not have terms like God or Allah and all this sort of thing, but it's real. We all know it. I may be questioned by my superiors and the bishops and so on, but this is real. Thank you.
In the lower 48, Indians are having some of the same problems encountered in Alaska, as we hear from James Patlan, a Pomo Indian from California.
I'd like to start off by saying that in California, due to westward expansion, several tribes have been pushed together. The religious and tribal identity has been somewhat mixed. Their concept, their practices to exercise their religion has been greatly infringed. Now, secondly, I'd like to explain a little bit about the history of California. When the Russians first landed, they established several bases on the coastline, and they allowed the local native people there to either choose to be Russian Orthodox or to retain the same religion that they've been practicing before the pre-Columbian era. After they left and the Spanish colonialism took over, they in many cases forced the Catholic religion on the Indian peoples, sold the Indian children as slaves, massacred, cut up people on islands, and just generally had a reign of havoc and terror on the native population in California. At one point, my tribe was 110,000 strong. Now we're down to 6,000 people. We used to be able to hunt deer, track, chase it, hours at a time, until we were able to overcome the natural obstacles and the deer allowed itself for us to kill it, at which time we offered thanks. Now they have regulations. You can't hunt deer. You can only be hungry during the season. There also was the time when we could go out and pick fruit off the trees and fish the seas for anything we needed. A good example is the abalone that we honor because it feeds us. We respect the ocean. Now the pollution in the water, the license restriction that you have to have a license or you can't fish, there again, we can't eat, we can't offer a thanks to the Creator for allowing us to take this materials to consume to stay alive as human beings supposed to. We were able to walk freely amongst the forests in our religious grounds where we buried people, where we offered thanks for being alive and wished them well for going on to the next world's journey. Public health said you can't bury them there. You have to have a permit. So we do everything the government say to do, and still we can't practice our religion. I like to have eagle feather in my hair today. While by law I have to have a card, a permit, to have the eagle feather. In the regulation, it says it has to be a bona fide tribal ceremony. American government don't recognize Indian ceremonies. They try to say the Native American church is using illicit drugs, according to the FDA. That illicit drug, as they call it, was around long before the FDA was ever conceived. So from a point where we could live in harmony and respect one another, at a point, I believe, some more stories say we could talk to the animals. And after all this and all that, here we are reduced to eating chemically provided Safeway foods, fake clothes, fake identities, wrong language. But the whole thing is here that our religion has been suppressed. We can't practice it. We try to practice it, they get mad. They say, well, it's pagan. It's not a recognized religion with the IRS status. The whole issue of the Indian Religious Freedom Act is probably should be a milestone in Indian rights. Unfortunately, why should we even have to have a paper to practice what we're supposed to have by being on this earth? No, the government say you have to have this. So then what they're going to do now in California is build a liquid gas plant on the Western Gate where the warriors and our people used to go to leave this earth to the second world. They're going to dig it up there and they're going to build a plant so they can make more money and charge us for the electricity. Now all these type of things not only happens in California, it happens all across the United States. The religion we need to keep when we have nothing, when we're down and out, welfare won't help us, BIA won't help us, when we're down to committing suicide, everybody always refers back to, oh God, give me strength. The only then and then do they try to go to the religion. But the religion is more deeper. Nowadays they try to beat it down and say, it's not important. You're in a white people's society. Learn their rules, learn their laws, be as they are so you can help your people. We can't help our people unless we establish and get this religious concrete block back together. The Indian tribes in back east, they call it the hoop, the sacred hoop of peace. Some people call it the white roots of peace. Other people call it different type of things. It's all one thing, remembering that we have a bond, a tie with nature. And we can't break that. Everything we are is nature. Everything in this room is nature. That's where the religious power are coming from. But with all the new type of things, technology, sciences, we're still trying to practice our religion and we're still getting kicked in the face. I mean, shoot, if we don't try to push what we have now on the children to try to have them to have something in this world, the religion, the fact that they know they're American Indian, Alaska Native, Native peoples of the world, and how they relate to the world, how they relate to anything in the planet that is natural, not man-made, we're going to lose it. We're going to lose everything. We're losing the land now. We're losing our resources now. They're taking the blood from our mother, the oil. They're taking it out of our mother. They're killing us. And we sit here and have to take testimony to the President of the United States when the government was formed after the Confederacy back east. We have to say, please let us do this. When we should be demanding that we have this inalienable right, it was always our right. The legislation is fine, it's beautiful, but unless we really realize what's happening here, we're going to lose everything, including our religion, which is the only thing we can say as Native peoples on this planet we have. That's all I have to say.
James Patlin, a Pomo Indian from California. And this concludes our series of programs on the American Indian Religious Freedom Act, an act to ensure that the federal government does not interfere with the practice of Native religion. I'm Paula Schiller, and this is Chinook, a production of KUAC-FM at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks.
Chinook, it's a warm wind.
It's a changing wind.
Chinook, a program for and about Alaska Natives.
Chinook Echoes is looking back into Native heritage.
How things are and how they got that way.
Chinook Patterns is information.
Issues that affect the patterns of Alaskan life.
Chinook Profiles, portraits of people, places, events.
But mostly the people who are Alaskan.
The special edition of Chinook comes several weeks after the death of North Slope Borough Mayor Eben Hobson, but it can never be too late to hear a departed leader honored, to reflect on what he did in life, and to know how he was mourned in death. Our thanks to David Harding, who put together the following montage from Moments of the Funeral Service in Barrow.
Eben's extended family was the top of the world. And then his relationship with the rest of the world. We have been much blessed to have him, have had him with us. On behalf of Hobson, of all Hobsons and Inupiat Eskimo family, may I extend to you the peace and beauty we all feel for your presence. Your prayers and your tremendous response to Eben's work and efforts, wherever they extended, we feel, like you, that God blessed us with a special person. And we are very thankful.
We would call upon the Honorable Mr. Jay Hammond, Governor of the State of Alaska, to bring tribute for the state.
I was privileged to know Eben Hobson for over 20 years. I knew him politically, sometimes as a friend and sometimes as a worthy foe. But I knew him personally as a full-time friend. Eben Hobson carved a niche in the history of the state of Alaska and the role of its people, which presents both a challenge and an obligation for those of us who follow him to attempt to fill. He was a mighty champion on behalf of causes in which he believed passionately. In the exercise of that passion, he could be as tough and hard and awesomely unrelenting as the land in which he was born and lived and died, as tough and harsh and awesomely unrelenting. The ravages of the sickness which finally laid him low did little to afflict his fighting spirit. And those of us who encountered that fighting spirit learned a little bit about how to live and how to die. Therefore, let's not grieve for Eben's departure from the pain and problems of this world, but rather rejoice in the rewards of his accomplishments, accomplishments which will be paralleled by few other men. When the final roll is called for all, and we're asked to stand and be accounted for those things we've done, few will stand as tall as Eben Hobson. If you must grieve at all, grieve for those of us he leaves behind, for we will surely miss him.
When I
Speaking for the North Slope Borough, a longtime friend and associate of Evan Hobson, Elder Lloyd Avakana, acting mayor of North Slope Borough.
We're together tonight, people of Barrow, and our Arctic friends in North Slope villages, as well as people from other parts of Alaska, to pay our respects to our friend and leader, Evan Hobson. We are here with Evan's family, and we share their grief, mourn with them. We share the loss of a man God must have chosen to bring us a leadership the Arctic had never seen before. We are proud of Evan Hobson. All Alaskans share our pride. As we grow older, we will speak with pride of our relationship with Evan Hobson. Our grandchildren will speak with pride of relatives who knew, hunted, soldiered, or worked with Evan. For the memory of Evan Hobson will become part of our Inupiat spiritual heritage. The world has just begun to hear of Evan Hobson. Already a legend among us, his memory will grow to become a national treasure, and it will strengthen our cause all across the North American Arctic. As we reflect upon the life of Evan Hobson, we must believe he was moved by the Holy Spirit to follow his vision for our future. His vision of Inupiat leadership has caused us to take up important national and international responsibilities. Evan's crowning work was the Inupiat Circumpolar Conference, and he struggled with his physical pain until he felt those gathered in Greenland would succeed in adopting a formal charter formally binding all Inuit together. The grief we share here tonight is often by the pride we feel at having known Evan Hobson. While we share grief with Evan's family, Evan's father Al and stepmother Harriet, Evan's brothers and sisters, Evan's wife, from reflecting upon the great strength of our Inupiat family. Evan's strength was our strength. It flowed from our loyalty to Evan, from the Inupiat people whom he served, from a region of strength, family ties, and lasting friendship. The world has only begun to tell the story of Evan Hobson. All of us here tonight, and all Alaskans, will share in the great lesson to be learned from the life and death of our beloved son, husband, father, friend, and leader, Evan Hobson.
Perhaps no group has benefited more directly from the creation of the North Slope Borough than the people we euphemistically call the senior citizens. This group of men and women, although they have added 2 years, also have added in wisdom and in contributions, and we find them gathered together day by day in the Senior Citizen Center with a great deal of enthusiasm and youthfulness. At this time, we will have tribute from the senior citizens under the direction of Mrs. Sadie Neacock.
Tonight, we're here paying our respects to Eben Hobson, who has been our friend, our fellow worker, and most of you who have come in to pay your respects. We've all known Eben and have worked with him. The thing that he taught me the most when I got discouraged was, well, you'll never learn that it will work until you try. You will learn with your mistakes. He said, experience was the best teacher. If you had a goal, you pursue it. Don't fall back. So, Eben and I, one time, a problem came. I think our friend Governor Egan, former Governor Egan, is here when he ordered that this waterfall problem in Alaska should be solved and we should all stop hunting ducks. I approached Eben and he said, what do we do? You're the legislator. Why can't you make the law for us to hunt? Eben said, well, I'll see what I can do. And he said, I'll wire my friend. This is how strong he put it. I'll wire my friend Governor Egan that we're all guilty of hunting ducks and we can all go to jail and he can support us. How well I remember that when he came forward and found solutions to problems, he came forward. His feeling towards his fellow people, our people, his concerns were never shallow. They were so deep you could feel them. And today I think we're all very thankful that there are many solutions to problems that he gave, answers to where if one of us had to do it, he would say, try your best and do it well.
From the funeral service of North Slope Borough Mayor Eben Hobson, produced for Chinook by David Harding in Anchorage. I'm Paula Schiller, and this has been a production of KUAC-FM at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks.